Hello and welcome to episode number 10 of Light the Eye, presented by the U of I Credit Union. I'm Scott Beatty.
And I'm Robert Rosenthal.
What do co-hosts get each other when they reach their 10th episode?
I believe it's the paper anniversary.
Good, so, I have a piece of paper right here.
Excellent.
When we're all done, you can have my note card.
Perfect. Double digits.
I've been sweating this out. I've been talking to my friends like, I don't know what to get Robert for the 10th episode. You know what I got you?
An Illini shirt so that I don't just wear the same rotation of five shirts.
No, actually, I got you not one, but two guests.
Excellent. I love it.
Two guests on this episode. And it just so happens they're Illini.
What are the odds?
One's a student athlete and one's a head coach. Joining us on the show, Lucas Bird, national champion wrestler, Illinois Wrestling, hosting a home meet this Saturday in Huff Hall. They'll take on Minnesota. Lucas is going to spend a few minutes with us. He is now in his seventh season of wrestling. An incredible story and an incredible athlete, Dyke Edelman winner, all kinds of accolades. And then Petros Kyprianou, he's the director of track and field. He oversees, call him the head coach. I think his official title is director because there's so much oversight that he does. Their indoor season takes place right here.
Right across the hall.
It's literally.
Yes.
It would take us 20 seconds to walk over to track and field.
Yep.
And more importantly, it would take him 20 seconds to walk here to join us for the podcast.
Which makes it easy.
Yeah. So if you're we're going to talk to a wrestler. So if you're driving around listening to us right now, it's a little riding time.
You knew you had to work it in some way now that you have the term.
If there is not a wrestling podcast out there called Riding Time.
There has to be. There's no way there's not.
Now, okay. So part of, I mean, look, not everybody's familiar with all the wrestling terminology, but that's the amount of time you have basically control of your opponent.
Yes, and if you need a tiebreaker, whoever had more riding time is winning that tiebreaker. Yeah. So, big deal.
So we're going to have a little bit of riding time with Lucas Bird, and then we'll vault ourselves. Well, that...
Yeah, you tried. You tried.
It was vault could be gymnastics.
It was
That's
an
why
effort.
I stopped myself.
It was an
We're going to jump
uh-huh.
into track and field with Petros Kyprianou, who's taken Illinois track and field to new levels, and he is not satisfied with where they're at either.
I almost tried to make a like leap kind of thing. I'm going to work on it. I got to work on a track and field dad joke, but we'll get there.
Yeah,
we'll get there. First, we got to do something.
You can't.
I'm feeling uncomfortable because it's so dark right now.
Yeah, the joke will just eventually fall into your lap.
Yeah.
See what I did there? Enough. Mm-hmm. All right.
Don't hit the table.
We're going to talk to some people who are really better at that things they do than we are at this, apparently.
People who talk good.
But before we bring them on, what do?
We light the eye.
What a treat for us on Light the Eye. Lucas Bird is here. He's a national champion at the 133-pound level. Won that in March of 2025. He's also a three-time All-American. He's won Big Ten titles. And he is the reigning Illinois Dyke Edelman Male Athlete of the Year. And he's with us here on Light the Eye. Maybe most significantly for you, Lucas, is we had an episode earlier in the year that identified the top moments of Illinois athletics in the calendar year 2025, and your national championship made that. So I assume amongst all the accolades that I read that that's going to be the top one for you.
Yeah. It's definitely one of those. It's always cool to be, I don't want to say a special, you know, part of Illinois, you know, athletics history.
Yeah. Seventh season now.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah. I don't know if we have time to go into all the math of how that happened, but
yeah,
it's been an incredible career for you, and you just passed up 100 victories this year in your career at Illinois. I saw.
Yeah, I did. I forgot about that. Yeah. I did do that. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I did win 100 matches. Yeah.
Here's my question for you: when you get to the top, like you did in the national championship, you know, you hear coaches all the time say, you know, more people die on the way down from the top of Mount Everest than they do on the way up, which is kind of a gruesome
it is
metaphor. But is there a challenge for you to keep an edge? Is you haven't lost yet this year. Is there a new motivation you have to find, or is it the same that's been driving you all along?
I mean, I there's definitely new of, you know, getting to go out and compete with obviously new guys. There's new guys in the rankings. Like, there's always new freshmen that are coming in. But I like, it's one of those things where I like winning wrestling matches. Like, it's as simple as that, you know. Yeah. It's a lot of people, you know, they put in, you know, I gotta, they put in all these thoughts, and it's like, it's just winning wrestling matches. And it's fun.
How did you find wrestling? Like, when did you settle on that being your sport?
I was kind of always around it. My dad's got a bunch of hilarious stories of, because I've been in a room with, you know, people that ended up being national champs, multiple time state champs, like people that had a lot of success in college. And I was just some little kid running around not knowing what I was going to do with, like, the sport.
Sure.
And then I played baseball, I played football, I played soccer, I played the violin, I did everything. And and my brother always made fun of me. And I think wrestling, it was just easier to stick with because it was what, one, my older brother did, and then, like, my dad was a coach. So it was like, all right, hey, we're going to practice. Like, we would just kind of go to practice as, like, the three of us. And it was like, all right, like, sounds good. We're going to practice. And it wasn't like my mom had to, you know, oh, I got to take Lucas to baseball and then Max the wrestling and then Lucas's game and Max is wrestling. Like, it was just kind of easier to keep everything, like, in a very small, tight circle.
And when did you know, like, okay, this is my thing. I think I could do this in college. Like, when did that click for you?
Oh, that didn't click until, like, junior high school.
Really?
Like, I, like, knew I, like, I don't want to say I knew I was good. I knew I had the abilities, right? I knew I had the talent. I knew I had the opportunities in front of me to do it. And then it was really just about going out and seeing how it went with the wrestling matches, like how well I could compete with the highest level guys. And kind of once that started to happen, like 2017, I made a world team. Like, then it was kind of like, all right, like, you know, you sure. know, like, my dad will tell people, he's like, ah, he doesn't suck. Like, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
So it was kind of that point of like, all right, like, I kind of, you know, I'm in it. Like, I know what I'm doing. I can have really good success with this, and then just kind of tried to continue on with it.
Yeah.
You mentioned your brother made fun of you. If you have an older brother making fun of you, is that just inevitably going to shape you into a competitor?
Probably. I always wanted to be better than him. So, like, that was kind of like a big goal, like, especially in high school. He had hit a lot of success in high school, 2-time finalist, 4-time placer. And then I just kind of always wanted to just be better. I was like, all right, well, I'm the younger brother. I'm just going to be better. How about that? Like, you could be older, but I'll be better.
I never had the older brother. I had sisters. So I wonder if I had somebody driving me that way.
Yeah.
A little bit differently. You've been doing this now, you know, the regimen of wrestling, the workouts, the diet, the nutrition, the whole thing. Is there a part now at this point where you – something still feels like a sacrifice, because you probably just can't go home for Christmas and just eat all the time everything you want to eat
yeah.
that the rest of everybody else is eating. Or there's, you know, hey, friends are hanging out, but nope, I can't. I got to go to bed, or I got to get to practice. Is there something like, yeah, this still feels like a sacrifice?
Yeah, I mean, kind of especially coming back for a seventh year, like, a big thing would be, like, you know, me and Ellie doing long distance. Like, we've been kind of doing that for a while now, and that's something that's really, like, hard when, because Ellie was, like, a big drive when we were both here. Like, she would drive me, you know, to keep continuing to grow and continue to get better. And then, not that she still doesn't do it, but, like, being long distance, you know, I go home to my two cats, and that's that.
What are the, like, cats' names?
Nacho and Cheese. I didn't name them. Ellie named them. I got them when she... We knew she was going to be moving for school, and I was like, I kind of, like, I think I want, you know, something that I'll
sure.
have to hang out with.
Absolutely.
Because I'm very introverted, so I was like, you know, I just want something I can hang out with. And I was like, I'm going to get cats. And then I ended up getting two orange cats. One's all orange, he's Cheese, and then one's, like, orange and white, so we call him Nacho.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And by the way, Ellie, many people know, but Ellie is a former Illini volleyball player, Ellie Holzman, and moment that went viral, as if national championship isn't a viral moment in itself, but you and Ellie embracing after the after the national title match is well worth seeing if you haven't. You've got a match this Saturday at Huff Hall against Minnesota for a dual season so far for you personally. How do you look at it? 9-0, it can hardly be better in that category, right?
No, you got to go out, continue to score points, and, you know, look to take the opportunities, kind of help guide these younger guys we're a very good team, and I think that we just kind of got to keep on roll with what we've been doing so far.
And the team as a whole.
Yeah, these guys, it's one of those where these guys are out here to wrestle. It's definitely different than teams prior. You can kind of tell these younger guys are hungrier. They have not more, like, you know, everybody has the ability if you're wrestling in college, but these guys kind of, they've got a little edge to them and kind of really looking forward to see how the rest of the season plays out and then kind of into the national tournament.
You know, on the broadcast of the national title match, the commentators were mentioning how, like, they thought you likely wanted to do MMA after wrestling. And I know a lot of wrestlers do that. Is that the plan? Do you want to continue that path after your career's done?
I've always wanted to do it. And I feel like if I don't give myself the opportunity, it'll be like breaking my little kid's dream.
Got it.
I feel like, you know, I've always wanted to do it. So it's like, hey, you got to at least try it to see what it's like.
Now, how will Ellie feel, or how will your mom feel when somebody's putting an elbow in your temple?
Probably not very good. Ellie always kind of, she's like, she's kind of one of those, like, she'll support me in doing it, but you know, she's a nurse, like, she sees a lot of, like, unfortunate things where
she can bandage you up.
I try to tell her that. She says, I'm not doing that.
Love it.
Lucas Bird is in action on Saturday along with the Illini wrestling team, 1 p.m. against Minnesota at Huff Hall, here just a few steps away from the Army where we are right now. Lucas Bird, congrats on the season's success. We've got another special thing that we're going to be putting out with you. We'll tell folks about here before the episode is up. But thank you so much for your time, and good luck Saturday.
Cool. Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
When we come back on Light the Eye, Petros Kyprianou, head coach of Illinois Track and Field, right after this.
Each and every episode of Light the Eye is brought to you by U of I Community Credit Union. You know, I'm sitting here. We were looking something up on campus. I have a campus map up. I'm looking at an aerial photo of State Farm Center and Memorial Stadium and everything else. And just to the south in the Research Park is the main branch of U of I Community Credit Union. They are orange and blue. We are orange and blue. They have a card with orange and blue on it. I have a card with orange and blue on it. They're the perfect sponsor for this podcast because they live and breathe this campus. So thank you to them. You can check them out online. It's U of I Community Credit Union. And let's get to our next guest.
Thanks for being with us on Light the Eye, presented by the U of I Credit Union. Scott Beatty, Robert Rosenthal. And our next guest is the head coach, the director of Illinois Track and Field. It's Petros Kyprianou, now in his fourth season. He has elevated the program to new heights, among other things, taking the women's team to a fifth-place finish in the national championships this past summer. And he is preparing his squad for the indoor season, which will have its first event as the Illini Open coming up this Saturday, right where we are. Well, not precisely where we are, but the same building.
Room. Yes.
In the Armory.
Across the hall.
Welcome, Petros, to Light the Eye. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
We thought, in this fairly new venture for us, we're right adjacent to an athletic facility. We have to have somebody on
That's
who
awesome.
Does athletics right here for Illinois in this building. And my number one question for you is, how'd you get a parking spot?
Well, realistically, I don't have one. I just gamble, and I usually average one or two tickets a year. So I figure it might be cheaper than buying
Probably.
A pass.
Yes. That was my theory back in college.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm stuck in my college days.
That's
I guess.
Right. That's
well,
right.
It's good to know that the head coach who works in this building doesn't get a parking spot.
Yeah. But
I will say this. Who's in charge of the university? It's not the athletic director. It's not the head football coach. It's not the chancellor or the president. It's parking.
Yes.
They are in charge of the power.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
Well, it's great to have you. This is the middle, really, of your season, mm-hmm. right? You've had cross country. You're into indoor season now. Outdoor will be coming up soon enough. So just for a moment, as a diving in point, just where are you at? And how do you feel about where you're at here in the midst of 2025-26?
Yeah, we started our basic cycle of training back in September. Obviously, you know, about one quarter of our teams are, you know, cross-country athletes, so they were already in season by September. So everybody else had to do general conditioning and all that good stuff. As we return from the holiday break, we're getting ready to compete, start our indoor season, like you said, this upcoming weekend. We are in a very good spot, at least on paper. We have a lot of talent on the team. Everybody has trained very hard, had a really strong fall training, and obviously the hay's in the barn, like they say. Our farmer friends, and we are in position to push for some more history, hopefully. But like I said, on paper we look really good. I mean, everybody's fine. You just got to keep them healthy and happy, and that's probably the hardest one. But we're in a good spot.
Well, you came into U of I with some national titles under your belt. You've had several stops on the college circuit. Did what you envisioned when you first got here, has it come to fruition so far now that you're in season four? You know, you came in with a plan, is what I'm saying. Yes. Have you been able to stick to that plan by and large?
Yeah. I mean, I remember you and I had a conversation as soon as I got hired, and, you know, you asked me a few good questions, and I gave you some pretty gutsy answers. But I think we are headed that way, especially if you see where these teams were before we started 4 years ago, like how in the bottom, I mean, we were Big Ten and NCAA bottom warmers. You know, no offense to anybody that was before us, but that's where Illinois was, track and field. And everybody believed in us, and, you know, Josh's administration believed in us and supported us at his best way. And, you know, coming off a year, the last couple of years, you know, with the Big Ten title, you know, the women going from basically averaging 11th place to winning it, and, you know, last year finished second indoors, and then becoming a top five NCAA team, top five, you know, picture Illinois football and basketball, you know, being in the Final Four right now. That's where track and field is, or finished last year. It just doesn't get the same amount of attention, unfortunately, and it's we have a lot of impressive young men and women that have done some tremendous things, from world medals to Olympics and, you know, being all Americans and all that good stuff. But it's a very fun process, and I think we're headed the quest. I mean, I'm not gonna lie to you, the quest is to win the national title. I'm not gonna hide from that. I mean, that's always been in my mind. I really don't care about anything else. It's not easy. It's a lot harder than I thought it will be, but finishing in the top five, that puts you in the entry and ready to knock on the door to get in. So doing that in the third year of our tenure here, it's pretty good. I think it you know, I don't have a lot of patience. I would have liked to have win everything, but you got to take into consideration, you know, where we used to be. And unfortunately, we have hard time, you know, getting superstars to come here. They just don't want to come here. We don't have the cachet, you know, so I have to just go back to my Moneyball, you know, mindset, where I have to go find different ways, and whether it's an international or portal or different event area or something like that, you know, it gave us the opportunity to get to almost 30 points outdoors and miss a trophy by half a point, basically. And and this year, the men are actually very powerful too, at least on paper, with some newcomers we just have and folks that were registered last year outdoors. We have some good folks that they're back that we're very optimistic about.
I want to ask you about track versus field. So I'm a novice here. You know, I follow, I'll check out results of events. And my take toward college track and field has always been, oh, well, that's a distance runner's school. Mm-hmm. That's a sprinter's school. Yeah. Arkansas is always going to have the best sprinters or whatever. You know, it's always that type of thing. It seems to me, just from the results so far, you've leaned heavily into the field side of track and field. Talk me through that, from recruiting to building that reputation to how it builds on itself of like, hey, these field events, that type of thing. Talk me through that.
Yeah, actually, that's a pretty not novice question. you're right. I mean, there's schools that they have certain reputation, you know, like, you know, talking football terms. Oh, that's a defensive team, or, you know, Alabama, Georgia, you know, in football, they're defensive loader or whatever. I mean, track and field is very different, but yet not so much different. It's got a lot of moving pieces, and everything starts from the fact that you do not have a bench. So you have a Cody Johnston or Sophia Beckman or one of these top athletes we have. It's just one. There's no backup quarterback that will come in and do a decent job. Like, there's only one of them. So our jobs is to not only prepare them to be really good at what they do, but stay healthy, stay happy, stay fresh, stay, you know, have all these things where they're very, very fluid. So I chose a little more the field direction just because it's more technical. And nothing against my colleagues out there, but not a lot of people are, one, capable of training high technical athletes in high technical events. They would rather go get a distance runner or a sprinter. Like, they're more salesmen than, you know, engineers. So I like to be more of an engineer, where I can build a very powerful machine, and that machine will bring me more powerful machines. That's what my what I like to, what they called me as a Moneyball Petras back in Georgia. We did the same thing. That's how we won the national title, and only took six ladies. Five of them scored, and five of them got us a national title. So you don't need a lot, but that's the hard part.
Yeah.
They got to be very highly motivated, be highly talented, and be able to accept the technical guidance. And we chose the field events. Now, if a superstar sprinter, you know, wants to come here, of course, I'm not going to say no.
Sure.
It's just Illinois is one of these places that, not yet, we're going to be that. It just doesn't have the reputation. Unfortunately, we just never had it. Like, we're building it right now. We're just making it. And when you finish top five, you know, it not only helps other sports too, but it puts you in position to be like, well, why is Illinois in the top five? I mean, I've gotten that so many times, and it really pisses me off a little bit. But at the same time, it's I look at it as a compliment to Josh's, you know, vision and my vision and where we want to be. And, you know, I remember Josh asked me in our interview process, why Illinois? And I think he asked that to every coach he hires. Mm-hmm. And I told him, I said, because I think this place is a sleeping giant. Yeah, it's not easy to get people to come here. And I think a lot of people can easily quit on Illinois, a lot. But then you got to go find the athletes. And it takes more work. I have to go across the world to go bring a, you know, these young men we just got on campus, you know, it's a 7'6" foot high jumper. I mean, 7.51 last year in the NCAA. So you just got to go all the way to Israel to get a guy like that. Or, you know, Sophia Beckman that is 30 minutes from the University of Oregon, and we took her away from all of them. So, but she was open-minded, and she didn't care about the shiny and the, you know, the sunshine and palm trees, you know.
Sure.
So it's a lot of moving parts. But to your point, yes, we are known more as a field events team, preferably jumps and jumps combined events and throws. But you know, we've had some good runners here too, and we have a very strong history, especially in the men's, you know, distance running, which, mm-hmm. you know, unfortunately is really hard to replicate that with the new setting, because now there's a lot more schools.
Sure.
Than when you know, when our great runners used to run in the mid-70s. Now you got, you know, 40, 50 schools that put a lot of money in those events, and everybody's doing the sprints and distances. So we chose to do something different. And, you know, you look at what Coach Underwood is doing with basketball, it's very similar, you know. If the superstar American guy doesn't want to be at Illinois, I'm gonna go find a better guy out in Serbia. And,
sure.
Yeah, why not?
Sure. How helpful has the new-ish facility been for that? I remember when you were hired, that was kind of a big sales point of like, look, we're upgrading facilities here significantly. How helpful has that been?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. I mean, right now we're just caught up with most of the teams. I guess, again, we're not close to what Oregon, Arkansas, and all of them have. I mean, we're nowhere near that.
Yeah.
But it's a lot better than what it used to be, a lot better. And our administration is very open-minded. I just told I told Josh, until we win championships, I'm not going to ask for anything. But once we start winning,
get ready.
Yeah, and we did one. So you know, when you win a Big Ten championship, I mean, it's not a an easy feat. But no, they've been extremely supportive, and they haven't said no to us yet. You know, especially like the. The little things, and you know, we are known even at Georgia. We won national titles with like 1/3 of what, let's say, other major teams' budget have. So we've done it cheaply, and that's it. Goes back to the model, the field events. It's a lot cheaper, especially in this NIL era, where you know the highest paid athletes are going to be your elite sprinters and your elite distance runners. I mean, when you get a 7'6" high jump guy to come in with zero money, zero NIL. We have zero NIL in the men's side, and for us to be able to get somebody like that, where you know, if he was an American guy, we wouldn't be touching him.
Sure,
because we can't pay them. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
So we got to do things differently. But the facilities definitely. I always wanted to have my own indoor. I don't care how good or bad it is. Just give my own indoor, my own outdoor, and I got it here. So I'm very thankful for that.
And now you have an indoor space that has a podcast studio.
There you go. Jason. That's exactly can't beat that.
So I feel like you've really hit the jackpot.
Yeah.
On the women's side, you've mentioned her name now a few times, Sophia Beckman, the long jumper from Oregon, of all places. I get it. You know, some athletes or students, just in general, if they're near a certain campus, like, I got to go away.
Yeah.
I got to go. You know, I want to get out of here. Others want to sort of stay for the hometown. So what was that dynamic like to bring her from basically the center point of track and field in this country?
Yeah, that was actually probably the biggest win for the University of Illinois track, getting Sophia here. Obviously, she was not really – she's a different cat in a good way, meaning, like, she – you can't fool Sophia. She's very smart. Like, she wants to go to the Olympics. She wants to win everything. She wants to be the best version of herself, and she felt that she had to go to a place that has the coaching and not just the buildings, you know? Now, if you have the coaching and the buildings, of course, it's great. But she – it was not easy to get her, but she was recruited, highly recruited by everybody. But we got on her very early, too. Like, we got her before she exploded to what she was when she came in. But I think she – she just wanted a different environment, that she felt that Illinois was the place to help her grow in long jump. And she's very happy, and we're happy for her. And actually, another person from the Pacific Northwest that we registered her last year, Jaciona Giroholt, she was the number one heptathlete and high jumper in the nation, American girl. And that's a name that you're going to be hearing a lot this year. She's one of our kind of hidden gems here that hopefully we can unveil soon.
On the men's side, Luke Peltmans from the Netherlands. He is 6'8". He's a freshman decathlete.
Yes.
Correct? Will he be focusing on anything particular, or he'll be doing the whole gamut there with the
decathlete? Yeah, he's a decathlete. Yeah, that's his event. And he's another nice jackpot we hit last year. And we got on him early, too. Like, you know, obviously having two Dutch decathletes prior to him helped a lot. With Yip and Raf, I mean, those two guys really helped a lot. I mean, obviously, they perform well, so he saw that, and he was a highly recruited guy, too. He wanted to come to the NCAA system, but he's a guy that scored 8,200 points, you know, with the junior implements, which is a little bit lighter shot put and a little bit lower hurdles. But he has the fourth best score in the history of U20 in the world in the decathlon. So for us to have a guy like that on our team is pretty good. So
I've always been fat. Like, as a coach, you probably there's no other sport that coaches a decathlete, right?
Like, yeah.
Hey, I'm going to teach you 10 things, you know, all this. How do you set up a training program for someone like that? Of like, okay, today is sprints, but we can't work you too much because we got to get to long jump at some point here.
You know, yeah, like. Yeah. It's a very tricky, and goes back to my main strategy. It's very complicated. It's very hard. And that's why it's so hard, you know, a quarterback, you know, getting a top-notch quarterback out of high school. I mean, that person probably spent a lot of hours with somebody that knows and can teach that person a lot of different plays and different techniques. So a decathlete has to master the events. He has to master the technical approach of each event. So, for example, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, we work a lot of technical stuff, which either is going to be sprints, jumps, plyos, and then Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays, we do throws and lift. So, but each event that I like to combine, let's say the hurdles with the discus, as weird as it sounds, there's correlation there with the takeoff angles or the spinning, you know, the way the arms work. So as a coach that has a biomechanics background and knowing how the mechanics work, you got to make sure you pair those events so they both events can have an advantage and improve without doing too much work. For example, you know, instead of spending 2 hours in the discus and 2 hours in the hurdles, you spend 30 minutes in hurdles and 30 minutes in discus, but they help each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, or, you know, sprints and long jump, those two work with each other. So if you know how to pair those events, then you're becoming more efficient and the athlete gets the benefit of, you know, that combination of events.
Sure. Sure.
Where do you spend most of your time in practices? Because again, you've got a lot. How many is on your roster now?
About 72.
That's men and women?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you can't give attention to 72 people at once, right? So how do you spend your time versus farming that out, I guess, to your assistants?
Yeah. Yeah. So the assistants have their own groups where they manage. Now, obviously, I have to, you know, walk around and make sure everybody's doing well and they're doing the right thing. And but right now we have a very well-oiled machine in a way. All the coaches are on board with, you know, with the vision that I introduced 4 years ago. I mean, they're the main core of coaches that I hired back then, and they've been strong and amazing at their craft. Now, personally, I spend a lot of time coaching the horizontal, like long jump, triple jump, high jump, and the combined events, heptathlon and decathlon. So because I'm out there from, you know, 9 to now, like 3 o'clock, I spend about 6-7 hours on the track. I get to watch everybody. That's the good thing.
Yeah.
Now I have my hours to manage, you know, some of the logistical part, and but I do have good assistants that really make my job a lot easier.
I saw you 6-7 there. You're the parent of a, what, 12-year-old? And
yes, a 13-year-old and a 9-year-old.
I saw you do your little thing there.
You said 6-7 hours, so I had to.
Should have said 7-8 then.
Yes, exactly. 7-8 hours.
I still haven't gotten the joke, but
I don't even understand it.
That's part of what they want.
Yes.
They want you to not know the joke.
Yeah.
That's right. I have a question about Champaign. You know, 4 years here now. What's it been like for you, you know, just moving here, everything else, the community, you know, you're several years into this now. So
yeah, it's been great. I mean, I'm one of these weirdos that I like four seasons, so I don't mind, because growing up where I grew up, you know, in Greece, it was always hot, so I never enjoyed that. I like four seasons. I like the Midwest folks. I mean, that's where I first started when I came to the U.S. about 22 years ago. Mm-hmm. I went to the University of Nebraska at Omaha, which, you know, I got to be around a lot of folks that they brought me. They're very hospitable. They're very nice. So I always wanted to sort of come back to the Midwest. I really enjoy it. I mean, obviously, my youngest son, he's in Chicago playing for a soccer team there. And, you know, Chicago is my favorite big city in the U.S. And being here close by and in this great institution, and the community has been amazing all these 4 years. So
can you, when you go to Chicago, get something close food-wise to what you had growing up?
Oh yeah. There's this this Greek restaurant named Sister Ya in North Chicago. It's 99% authentic.
Yeah.
Now you can't beat, you know, being in Greece and eating homemade Greek food, but this place is amazing. I mean, I actually want to go every Sunday, to be honest with you. I don't mind driving 2.5 hours.
Is, if yeah. there's really a good. Dish I could put in front of you right now that would most say that's home, or that's my, I don't know, maybe somebody in your family's cooking or something, what would it be?
Yeah, the lamb. The they have this oven-made lamb with potatoes. It is exactly the way I used to eat it.
Now, do you make any of your own?
No, I'm a terrible cook.
And you can't, I mean, I know there's the Greek neighborhood in the Chicago. I grew up outside of Chicago, so mm-hmm. you sometimes go in and experience some of the good Greek food. But
there's a lot of Greek places up there.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And you said growing up in Greece. I think I saw somewhere in your bio it says Cyprus.
Cyprus,
you,
yeah.
One and the same for you, or
yeah. I mean, Cyprus is, you know, it's independent island nation right now, but this is the weird part. They have the exact same national anthem as Greece, and the main language is Greek, and they have two flags, the Greek and the Cypriot one. So, yeah. You know, it's not everybody knows what Cyprus is. So, you know, I like to call them I'm Greek Cypriot. That's because there's Turkish Cypriot. So sure. I'm Greek Cypriot. So mm-hmm. I just make it easier by saying Greece.
Sure. But you see a Greek flag, you say that's yes. home. That's,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
my
yeah,
country.
Yeah. Yeah. And I spent 10 years in northern Greece where I went to school and worked and all that too. So
when did it first come to you that, like, hey, I'm going to, I assume you were a track athlete first.
Yeah.
Was there some point where I got a coach? I want to do this. And I want to be, you know, you're in Greece. Do you ever envision, I want to be coaching college in the United States? In the prairies of Illinois?
No, not in my wildest dreams. But I'm glad it came true because, I mean, not a lot of people can say I do what I love and I get paid for it. You know, I mean, this is my dream job and my dream profession, and I'm doing it and I'm loving it. But no, I realize I'm going to be a coach when I came to a conclusion that I'm not very talented as an athlete, and that I'm very interested in teaching the techniques and teaching the events and all that. Like, it just came natural. So I kind of cut my career short in 2000, and then 2001, I was basically a full-time coach. So, I mean, for me, it came very natural. But to get to this, obviously, I came to the U.S. to get my master's degree and then go back to show them, you know, hey, I'm educated now, give me a job, because it's hard over there. You know, I've had Olympic athletes before I came to the U.S., and it's just, there's no reward over there. Like, you can have an Olympic medalist, and you would never get a job. And for me, I had to be in the land of opportunity, you know, to make that happen. But my intention was not to stay here and work in the system. I just fell in love with it when I was volunteering my first year at the University of Nebraska, Omaha, and I realized, oh, man, this is a lot of fun, and you get to do what you love and actually pay you for it. And I remember my first salary was $24,000, and I felt so rich. Because I could pay my bills and could be free, you know, and sure. There's not a lot of places that can give you that.
Yeah, I have to ask about the Adriatic Illini on the basketball court.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, you know, Andrei Stojakovic, mom was from Greece, and he grew up in
Thessaloniki. That's where I went to school. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. So what's it been like to see that develop here on campus?
Yeah, it's great, because the funny thing is my wife is Serbian. Mm-hmm. And when they were recruiting him, I actually reached out to our sport administrator to say, hey, if they need any help, you know, we speak both languages, sure. So we can help out. But yeah. I think they had it all done by then. Yeah. But I'm glad to see that, because, you know, Serbians and you know, the former Yugoslavians, I mean, they're very tough. I mean, they're extremely savvy in what they do. I mean, that's just that their culture, you know. I mean, they're very good in what they do. And with Andre, you know, having both Greek and Serbian blood, I mean, that's probably the perfect combination
sure.
for what he does. Mm-hmm. And his dad, obviously, you know, was who he was. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it's great to see that, because the community embraced that, and that's very nice to see as an immigrant that came here to give and sure. be rewarded, you know. That's what the American dream is all about.
Yeah. I like the contrast, because next summer, or this summer, is, you know, 250 years of the nation's birth here.
Yeah.
And Andre's from Thessalonica. You went to school there. Yeah. You could just be like, yeah, well, my town's in the Bible.
Right.
You know, yeah. This country is like so yeah, young and yeah. a baby compared to the history of
yeah.
of the Greek people. But do you have an advantage amongst track coaches because you're international? It's a global sport, or is everybody kind of recruiting international and it just so happens?
Yeah. No, I think it is true. You do have an advantage because you grew up in an environment that doesn't give you second chances. That's one, you know. So everything you do, you got to be perfect. Like, you got to hit it right. Otherwise, you feel like you have it in your gut that you're not going to get another chance. You're not going to get the opportunity to redo where in this country, my own kids, I mean, they're both Americans. They know, oh, I can have second or third chances, you know. But also the main advantage is being around different cultures, you know, understanding how everybody thinks. And it's not only one way. And that's what makes America great, because it was made by a bunch of immigrants, you mm-hmm. know, hundreds of years ago. And we all brought something special here. I mean, I'm an American citizen now, and I love this country because of the opportunity that has given me. So I just hope more people will embrace that and understand that you can learn a lot from different cultures and make yourself better in what you do. And in my case, as a track coach, I've seen a lot of things, a lot of different approaches to different techniques in my case, you know, different approach in developing talent, developing champions, developing, you know. Now, personally, I worked, you know, with professional football and basketball players in the strength conditioning department. So I have another little bit of a head up, per se, where I can see things a little bit differently or with different lenses than somebody else. And it gives me a little bit of an advantage in approaching athletes, you know, from different parts of the world.
Yeah. Let me ask maybe the 100th person to ask you, or maybe the first of 100 that'll ask you about the Olympics coming to the United States in 2028. Winter Olympics are upon us. But as that gets closer, how big of a deal is that? Or what's the intersection of what you're doing here and the fact that the Olympics happen to be in the United States in 2028?
Oh, it is huge. It's a highly anticipated event.
Sure.
Clearly, the schools that are in California, they're probably even more excited, and they have an advantage on all of us. But I think the whole nation, at least in my sport of track and field, has come together. And everybody's united to make it the best. And I think it's going to be the best Olympics in the history. From what I hear, from what I understand, from knowing, you know, the athletes are in this country, the show that's going to be put on, I do have a feeling that it's going to be the best Olympics. Now, the Japanese had done the best job I've ever seen in the Olympics. I've been to 4 different Olympic Games. Tokyo 2020 or 2021, it was the best by far. But I think the U.S., L.A. 2028 is going to be the best. Just a gut feeling I have.
That's great to hear. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. Want to highlight that the Illini Open is happening this Saturday, a few yards from where we are in the Armory. And it begins at noon this Saturday, which is the 10th. Help my calendar here, right?
Yep.
We got the 10th. All right, we got a lot of events going on this Saturday.
Yeah.
What are folks going to see?
They're going to see some elite world-class athletes. I mean, from, you know, Sophia Beckman, the USA U20 world record holder, USA record holder, you know, Cody Johnston, a guy that jumps well over 18 feet. Just look up, reach 18 feet, and know that we have 4 guys right now that can jump over that. And Cody Johnston is somebody that can jump close to 19. You're going to see a young lady that she's about barely 5'7" foot tall, that she jumped over 6'6". You're going to see two young men that can throw close to 70 feet in the shot put. You're going to see 2 young ladies that can throw the weight throw extremely far. You know, see world champions training and competing, from Deanna Price to Heath Baldwin. It's just a series of athletes, like very diverse, world-class athletes that they are going to put on a show. And it's an impressive, I understand track and field is a very long event, but we've done a good job in our home meets to condense. We have a great meet management group here with Matt Kumler leading it. We are condensing the schedule to less than 4 hours, which is really good for track. And we pick and choose the events. So it's going to be all the highlighted events that our team has, and it will be a lot of fun. And we urge everybody to come and cheer for our groups.
And that's starting at noon on Saturday, is that right?
Yes.
Starting at noon. Got it. Perfect.
Petros Kipriano, Director of Illinois Track and Field, a pleasure to have you. And, well, you're welcome anytime, and you're not far away.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
More in a moment on Light the Eye. Thanks so much to our guests, Petros Kipriano, and before that, Lucas Bird. And before we say goodbye on this one, Robert, tomorrow night, Rutgers is the opponent for Illinois men's basketball, a team you said was not good.
Yeah.
And then they won their last game.
Yes. Yes.
You know, Robert, in the Big Ten, anyone can win on any given night.
I mean, look at Michigan, Penn State. I mean, that's expected to be a 25-point blowout, and Penn State had a three to possibly win. So,
And Minnesota, they stormed the court after they beat Iowa.
Yes, yes. So now, great, Iowa comes in angry on Sunday. But first up, Rutgers. Yeah, look, they're probably going to finish last in the Big Ten. That's the likely scenario here, so you better take care of business at home.
Yeah.
They're young. They're probably going to struggle on the road, so it's a game where hopefully Brad Underwood can work on a couple things and work on rotations and, you know, maybe get Brandon Lee some minutes and get Petrovich out there a little more and that type of thing. It's hopefully that kind of game where in the second half he can go a little deeper on the bench and get some guys some minutes.
Those games never happen when you plan for them.
Yes.
Oh, this is going to be a game where I can play the reserves more.
Yes.
And then you know it's going to be just a rock fight, especially with Rutgers.
Yes. And then you think you're going to have a close game like bragging rights, and it turns into a 9x, 4x domination. I just wanted to bring it up again. I'm going to bring it up in March again, but I just wanted to bring it up again.
I want to let everyone know, we want to let everyone know, Lucas Bird was here for us for this episode, but we have a special bonus episode of Light the Eye.
Yes.
Because once you do 10 episodes and you can start doing...
You've earned yourself a bonus.
You can just walk around and say, we can bonus ourselves. It's like my coffee card at my favorite coffee spot. I get a free cup of coffee if I've purchased 10 cups before that.
Mm-hmm.
They say it's free. I'm like, no, it cost me 10 cups.
That's right. That's right. That's how this works. So this episode is going to be video only, really.
Yeah. So if you are listening on Apple, Spotify, we won't push it to those platforms because...
Yes, it will only exist as video because it is a video review of his national championship match. And we go deep dive. If you don't know anything about wrestling, if you're planning to go on Saturday to watch the duel with Minnesota, if you haven't ever been around wrestling, we just sat down and went through every minute of his national title match. There were a lot of... there were two coaching challenges during the national title match last March. There was, you know, controversy over a stalling call. There was this a takedown or did he have control? There were all kinds of things. So we went very deep on that, and that will be up just in the podcast feed. Just in the YouTube feed.
Yeah, but you don't have to know wrestling to watch and take it in because there's some teaching that goes on. You help... You're going to help people understand a little bit of wrestling. So I think wrestling fans will appreciate it.
But
if you're a little bit new to the sport, I think you would still enjoy. And I always think it's cool when I hear an athlete or a coach walk through. This is why I liked the football video that went out with the coaches calm.
Sure. Yeah.
Because it's a peek behind the curtain of what goes into thinking and strategy and competing.
Yes. And this will be exactly that this is, you know, two of my kids wrestled, and so I have some basic knowledge of wrestling. The rules are a little different in college, but it was fun to go through and just it's helpful if anybody ever flips past wrestling on BTN. Like, what is that? Why did he get points there? Why did they do this? What's a stall? Lucas walks us through every ounce of it. And who better to have do that for an entire episode than, you know, a national champion?
So we will do that next time on a very special episode of Light the Eye.
Like 80s sitcom.
Yeah.
Tuesday night. Yes.
On a very special episode.
Yes.
But in the meantime, a reminder again, you can catch Illinois wrestling, as Robert just mentioned, at Huff Hall this Saturday, Illinois track and field here in the Armory. Of course, basketball's going on, and the gymnastics is in action too in the next several weeks over here in the winter. There's all kinds of things going in the winter. So hope you're enjoying it. And we really appreciate you being here with us for Light the Eye. Please, if you would, like and subscribe. And we love hearing from you. You can drop a comment in the YouTube feed, or you can send us an email, lighttheeyepodcast@gmail.com. That's lighttheeyepodcast@gmail.com. So one more time, a reminder, you can see wrestling this Saturday in Huff Hall against Minnesota. Track and field here in the Armory, where we are this Saturday. Of course, basketball Thursday night for the men, and then both the men and the women are on the road this weekend, plus gymnastics going on, plenty going on as we spotlight Illinois. Thanks so much for joining us. For my partner Robert Rosenthal and our producer Kevin Southworth, I'm Scott Beatty. We'll talk to you again real soon on the next edition of Light the Eye.